It is good to be with you this morning. It's really good to be here. And in preparing for my sermon this morning and thinking about what to speak on, Brianne will tell you I deliberated a lot, thinking back and forth. There's something about coming to the end of a chapter in your life, particularly the time that you'll get to spend with a particular group of people, that makes you think about, well, what's important? What needs to be said? What can I say in the little bit of time I have left? And that's valuable to think about all the time. Sometimes when we have lots of time or we think we have lots of time, it's easier to waste time on things that ultimately don't end up being that important. But when you've only got a limited window of time, There's a value to reflecting on that. We talked a few weeks ago about teach us to number our days, that we need to do that in every area of our life. But I thought, well, what's the most important thing? And so we're going to talk about love this morning, because Jesus said this is the most important thing. So we're going to talk about a few different aspects of this, about love. But just as we get started this morning, I want us to look at just a couple passages that emphasize the importance of love. We're not going to like study these in depth. But of course, what did Jesus say when he was asked, what is the greatest commandment? What could Jesus have said? You know, he could have said, you know, they're all important. Don't neglect any of the commandments. All the commandments are important. And there's a sense in which that's true, but Jesus didn't say that. What did he say? He said, you need to love God with all your heart. And number two, you need to love your neighbor as yourself. And then he says, there is no commandment greater than these. That's it. There's no greater commandment. And what do those two commandments have in common, of course? Love. Love God, love one another. And so that is the most important thing. In John 13, when we were studying this a couple quarters ago in the high school class, it struck me what happens there in John 13. This is the last conversation Jesus really has with his disciples. And again, if you're having a last conversation or what you think will be a last conversation with somebody, you're not going to waste your breath. You're going to talk about what is most important. And after Judas leaves, there's some other things he talks to them about. But after Judas leaves, the first thing he talks about, he says, you need to love one another. By this, all men will know that you're my disciples. This is the defining characteristic of a Christian. And it's a little bit amusing to me that the very next thing Peter says, he says, well, Lord, where are you going? Because he had said something earlier about that, that the disciples are distracted by other things in the conversation. And they have their questions and their, what's going to happen? But Jesus is laying out, listen, this is where you need to focus. And it's easy to get distracted for us too. But this is the most important. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 5, Paul writes a lot of things to Timothy, but at the beginning of this first letter to him, he says, the goal of our instruction is love. This is it. This is what we're trying to produce in the people that we teach. 1 Corinthians 13, of course, the famous passage, if I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, if I, you know, have all prophecy and knowledge and all these gifts, if I give my body to be burned and give all my possessions to the poor, but if I don't have love, I am nothing, I accomplish nothing, I am nothing. Love is it. If we miss love, we've missed it all. In Colossians 3, verse 14, which is where the title of lesson this morning comes from, he mentions at the end of this list, but above all these things, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. So, if you don't remember anything else about the lesson this morning, just remember that this is the most important thing, and it's worthy of our time and worthy of our attention, and there's no way we can cover everything about this in one lesson. But I just want to impress upon us that at the end of the day and at the end of our lives, we're measured by our love. That is what Jesus teaches us. So as we think about some principles of love, the first thing that we need to remember and distinguish is we live in a world where that word is just twisted and used in all sorts of different ways. And it's become a political thing. You know, love is love. Love wins. It's a word that gets thrown around a lot to stand for even immorality now and just all sorts of crazy things. And we need to be people who remember what love means. Love is easy to get confused with what other L word? Lust. And that's not what we're talking about. 1 Corinthians 13, of course, gives us the picture, the definitive picture of what it means to love. And of course, we've gone through before and studied this and looked at all the attributes of love, what love does. But if you were to boil it down, what is love? If you look at all the things that love does, love is patient and kind. It doesn't envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It doesn't insist on its own way. It's not irritable, resentful. You know, all these different things. Love, I think, ultimately comes down to the idea of putting the needs of others ahead of your own. It's a selflessness. It is a choice that we make, not a feeling that we feel. It involves our feelings. It involves our emotions. But it is ultimately a choice that we make to do what someone else needs, even at great cost to myself. That is what love really boils down to. And that's what we're being taught over and over again in the New Testament, is that you've got to get outside of yourself and you have to love. And in order to love, I have to let go of the things that I desire most. And I have to give up myself if I'm going to be someone who loves. As we think about this concept of love, the place that we have to start is we have to start with God's love for us. That's the most important love that we can know. And it's actually our knowledge of that love that leads to all the other types of love that we show in our life. John 3:16 gets quoted a lot, and sometimes it's easy for us to kind of become jaded to it. We just kind of hear it, and a lot of times we say, oh, well, there's more to that than just believing. Okay, well, yes. But in that discussion, God so loved the world. Now, what's the world, by the way? That place where everybody's doing what's right and everybody's treating each other well. And the world. He so loved the world that he gave. Notice that he so loved that he did what? He gave. Love is not about what we get. It is about what we give. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but should have everlasting life. We can't just let that glaze by us. We have to take that, internalize that. Romans chapter 5 is another place to go. There's several of these passages in the New Testament. There's kind of big summary passages that kind of help us to see the big picture. And Romans chapter 5 is another one of these. In verse 8, but God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That's how God shows his love. It's not just this feeling. It's something that God did. God gave his Son to die because he loved us, even while we were still sinners. God didn't wait for us to show love in return. And a lot of times in a relationship, that's the gridlock, right? Is, well, until they fill in the blank, I'm not going to show the love I know I need to show. And of course, God is the one who broke that, right? We were the ones in the wrong. And he was the one who took the initiative. John 15, verse 13, another one of these summary statements. John 15, 13. Jesus says, greater love has no one than this, that someone laid down his life for his friends. And of course, in the verse right before that, he would say that we have to love one another as he loved us. So this is it. This is the love of God. How do you boil that down? And so I sat down and I thought, well, how could I illustrate the love of God? How could I come up with an analogy or something that would kind of make it really hit home so that we really understand like what the love of God is? And the thing I come up with was like, you can't. It's the greatest. It's the highest. There's nothing above it. You can't compare it to anything else. You have to compare everything else to it, because it is the standard by which all other loves are judged. But one thing that I did realize was that if we were going to use an analogy, go back and start with Genesis 1 and start to read the Bible and start to look at the stories that happen in the Bible. And if you start reading through Genesis, you start and you come to Abraham and Isaac, and you get a picture there that's a powerful picture. And it's not a perfect picture in every way, because Isaac doesn't end up having to really die, does he? But Abraham and Isaac is just a picture of how much God loves us and what he's willing to do to make us right with him. And so you go back and you read Abraham and Isaac and that picture of him sacrificing his son on the altar there with a knife in his hand, and you say, wow! And he says, that's just a shadow. And then you read a little bit further and you see Joseph and his brothers, and how they mistreated him and threw him in the pit, sold him into slavery. They think he's dead. He goes and he ends up as the most powerful man in the world, second only to Pharaoh. And he has them in the palm of his hand, and he does test them. But then you get to the end of his life, and Joseph does what? I forgave you a long time ago. Why are you afraid I'm going to kill you? And you see the love that Joseph had even after all they did to him. And you're just, that moves us. And we think about, wow. And that's just a shadow. You look at Moses and Israel and the relationship that they had together. And all the times that Moses, you know, puts himself and intercedes for the people. God, blot me out of your book. Don't destroy this nation that you've brought out of slavery. You know, blot me out. And God says, I'm not going to do that. You know, it's the one who sins that's going to be held accountable. But do you see the foreshadowing? And we look at Moses and we say, how incredible that he would be so selfless and so giving. And for this people, for Israel, really? And that's just a shadow of the love God has for us. And then you come to the prophets. And of course, I've just skipped over a whole bunch of things. Hosea and Gomer, and the things that God told Hosea to do, because he says, I've loved my people, and this is how I feel, that they have committed adultery with me again and again, and I keep calling them back to myself. The heartbreak, the love. And you know, it's still an incomplete picture, because Hosea in chapter 3 is told to go buy her back again, you know, pay the slave's price for her. But what if Hosea had been told, you go and she's actually about to be executed and you give yourself instead of her? We'd be like, whoa, like it's even greater. So it's just a shadow. It's just a shadow. Jesus would emphasize this with some things, in like the parable of the two debtors, you know, the one that owes 10,000 talents. It's like the highest monetary value, the highest number. And then there's the one that owes 100 denarii. And just trying to begin to wrap our minds around the debt that has been forgiven on our account. He who is forgiven little loves little. Of course, who can forget that the prodigal son and his father? And the image that Jesus gives, here's the prodigal son coming home, and the father, not just smug, sitting at home, yeah, I thought you'd be, but running to meet him, embracing him, kissing him. It's just a shadow. It's just a shadow. Because God, in order to get the prodigal back, what did God do? He gave his only begotten son to get the prodigal son back. And each of these are moving, amazing. Paul in Corinth, this is one we were thinking about last week at the two-day study, in looking at Paul's relationship to Corinth, how much he loved them, how much he gave up and sacrificed for them. All of these relationships, all of these pictures, we can look at each of these in its own right and say, wow, look at that love. And all of it points us back to the love of God. So if I don't leave anything else with you this morning, I just want you, we just need to stand in awe that God would love us. Because it's when we begin to wrap our minds around that love that God has for us and what he's done for us, that we begin to love other people. John would say, we love, why? Because he first loved us. You know, our capacity to love, our capacity to give, goes back to the fact that Christ died for us. Paul would say, again, one of those great statements, I am crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. Because he gave up his life for me. The life I live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself up for me. That was what motivated everything that Paul did. Because Christ loved him, so that motivated all the love and sacrifice that he gave. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 14. The fact that we lay down our lives goes back to the fact that Christ laid down his life. Verse 14, for the love of Christ controls us. Because we have concluded this, that one has died for all, therefore all have died. And he died for all, that those who live might no longer live for themselves. That's what love is. But for him who for their sake died and was raised. Again, you just highlight that. That's just one of the big picture verses in the Bible. The more we comprehend God's love, wait a minute, he loves me that much? And maybe it's one of these Old Testament pictures that gets our attention that we're like, I never thought about it like that. Or maybe it's even the New Testament picture that we see what Paul's willing to do or what somebody else does in the New Testament. And you say, wow, like I never, that pushes me. And that's because we're not there yet. We haven't understood the love of God yet. But each little picture that we get gets us just a little bit closer. And you know, each picture in our own lives, the things that people do for us, the things that people sacrifice for us, the things that we realize we ought to be willing to do for other people, the things we're called on to do, each part of that just pushes us a little closer and a little closer and a little closer to comprehending the love that God has for us that surpasses knowledge. So that love should move us to at least, the way I'm doing it this morning, at least four different types of love that we're told to give in our life. And the first and the most important is to do what? Love God. And when we step back, I don't know about you, but there are some times that I struggle with that concept. Like when I really boil it down and say, okay, I got to love God more. How do I do that? How do I start with that? Is it just this feeling that I need to generate? Do I need to like cry more during the Lord's Supper? Do I need to like, you know, emote or like what? How? What does that mean? And like, it's because it encompasses everything else we do. Loving God and putting His desires above our own is at the foundation of everything we do. Whether it be mundane and daily or whether it be heroic and once in a lifetime kind of a thing. We've got to love God. But I think loving God comes back to the point before it. We grow in love for God the more we realize how much He loved us. I think that's one of the primary ways we grow. Is the more we realize He did what for me? If He did that for me, then wow, you know, it is His love that grows our love for Him and our knowledge of that love that pushes us to do more for Him. It does really boil down, though, to the fact that when we love God, we are going to do what He asks us to do. Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commandments. And people want to pit those against each other all day long and say, oh, you're being a bunch of legalist if you focus on the commandments. And oh, it's all about love. And other people, oh, well, like, love, love, love. And then like, the commandments are not important. But listen, if you love God, if you love Him, you want to do what He wants. You want to put His desires, His mission, His plans before your own. And that makes obedience such a wonderful thing. His commandments are not burdensome, John would go on to say in 1 John. And it's because we love Him. It's because we want to do what He says. At the end of Jesus' interaction with Peter, you remember what he said? Simon, son of John, do you love me? Those are piercing words. And he says, you know I love you. And what did Jesus say? How do you know you love Him? Feed my lambs. Tend my sheep. There's this unbreakable connection between loving God's people and loving God. And sometimes we don't love God's people enough because we don't love God enough. And so all these things are going to run together. The next one, of course, the first greatest commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And it's worth meditating on each one of those. It's interesting that he gives us the kind of the three or four different dimensions of that. But what's number two? Love your neighbor as yourself. And then, of course, the question becomes, as the lawyer asked Jesus, what's the question we ask, right? Well, and who is my neighbor? Well, because if loving my neighbor means I love these people who do good to me and we're on the same page and all this, well, okay. But of course, he tells the parable of the Good Samaritan. Just, again, one more shadow, one more picture of what happened to us and what Christ did for us. You love your neighbor like you love yourself. It's intrinsic that we love ourselves. We do what's going to be good for us, what's not going to be hurtful for us. But you love your neighbor. You go out and you love your neighbor as yourself. That is the second most important thing. And there's several places in the New Testament where it says love is the fulfilling of the law, right? If you love your neighbor as yourself, what are you not going to do? You're not going to steal from him. You're not going to take his wife. You're not going to, kill him. All these things. It all boils down. Love your neighbor as yourself. One thing we've got to remember, and this is so key, we've got to keep the first commandment first and the second commandment second. Because we live in a culture and an age that is wanting to flip those. And of course, it's promoted as love, love. You're not loving. You're hating. You're a bigot. You hate people because you're teaching this thing that alienates people. And that's not loving. And that's not right. And that's the thing is, first commandment wasn't love everybody and approve of everybody at all costs. That was not the first commandment. Actually, that was never a commandment, by the way. But the love your neighbor was not the first one. Love the Lord is the first one. And love your neighbor is the second one. And it is the second one. It comes before love yourself. But we got to keep the first commandment first and the second commandment second. In John 13, of course, that very first thing Jesus brings up when Judas leaves, he says, love one another. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another even as I have loved you. We didn't even know how great God's love was until Jesus did what he did. I think that's the sense in which it is a new commandment. He just raised the bar and gave us another picture, the greatest picture. The cross is the thing that pushes our bounds of what love will do way beyond anything that we could have imagined before that. God dying on a cross. The more you think about it, the deeper it gets. And he says, you love one another as I've loved you. So love God, love your neighbor, love one another. I think he's talking about the love of our brethren. And that's hard to do sometimes. It's easier to love God than just to love one another. But Jesus says, just like I loved you, that's the love. That's the standard. I'm on the ground with the towel, like we talked about last week. You do that for each other. And I love, somebody just put this, I think on Facebook one time. They said, these are Christians, I can tell. That this is supposed to be the defining mark. Of all the doctrinal things that we could put in there, of all the other outward signs, people are supposed to identify who God's people are by their love. That's what Jesus said. This is how all men will know that you're my disciples, when you love one another. And if we love God, then we will love his people. What did John say, 1 John? If you haven't loved your brother, if you don't love your brother whom you have seen, how are you going to love God who you haven't seen? There is an unbreakable connection between these two things. If we love God, we will love his people, as difficult as that is sometimes, because the more we learn to love the broken, difficult people that we're with, the more we understand God's love toward us broken, difficult people. That's the connection. Is, well, yeah, it's hard, but that is why you are to reciprocate the love God gave you. That's the whole picture. And it is hard and it is difficult, but we have been given that kind of love. And if I can for just a minute, I want to read something because I am so grateful for the love of the body of Christ here. And I want to say thank you to my beloved brothers and sisters in Gettysburg. Though I don't have all the words, I just want to say I thank God for you. Thank you for the last 6 years and 7 months, almost. My life has been forever changed as a result of coming here. Thank you for taking me in like family, and thanks especially to the Smelsers for taking me in as family. When I came here, I did not even realize how much I had to learn. Thank you for enduring my early sermons and my immaturity and being gentle with me. And by the way, go easy on Jonathan when he gets here. Thank you for helping me grow by your examples and your encouragement when I stumbled on some things that were useful. Thank you for encouraging me in my work here, but thank you for not putting me on a pedestal. Thank you for expressing your gratitude while helping me to be humble. I have a lot more to say specifically to Scott, but for now I just want to say a special thanks to him for taking me under his wing, making me feel like an equal, like a coworker, even from the start. Your studies with me have been invaluable. Thank you for being a good example, a good teacher, and a good friend. And thank you all for being examples of how to love. That's what we're talking about this morning. Thank you for showing me love by correcting me when I needed it. Thank you for those conversations after class where you say, I think you ought to take a look at verse such and such again. I thank God for those times, and I have needed those times. Thank you for showing me what hospitality looks like, not just by inviting me into your homes and feeding me, especially when I was a young single bachelor, but thank you even more for showing me hospitality by welcoming me into your hearts and into your lives. Thank you for showing me what love looks like, even when things are difficult as a congregation and when we all fall short in some way. Thank you for showing me how to grieve. And thank you for showing me how to comfort those who are grieving. Thank you for showing me the value of hard, persistent work. And thank you for showing me the fruits of not growing weary in doing good. Something else I've been reflecting on. Thank you for loving Brianne a long time before I was ever here. Thank you, of course, especially to the Smelsers for that. But to all the brethren here who have helped her in growing up, your contributions to her character formation will forever be a blessing to my home. I owe all of you more than I can say for these blessings. Thank you most of all for continually pointing me to God and to his word. I know that your love, has been a manifestation of his love in my life. He's worked and continues to work through your examples and through your words, and to him belongs all the glory. God has forever blessed me through your selfless love, and it has helped me to see his love even more. I thank God for you. To him be the glory. And there's a lot more words I could try to say. I figured I'd write that down because I love you guys so much. And this won't be the last time we'll see each other, if the Lord wills. Well, there'll be other times our relationship will be different as far as frequency of seeing each other. But I am so grateful that I've had such good examples of love in this congregation. And that's what God wants us to do for one another. And I've benefited so much because I came here. And so I want to commend you for that, but I also want to warn you not to let go of that. Again, we've talked about this several times recently. The work of love is never done. And just as you've done well, and I'm so grateful for that, don't stop. There's a lot more work to be done. I don't know how long it's going to be before our Lord comes back, but until that day or until he calls us home, may he find us working, and may he find us loving. Not the last person God tells us to love, though. You got to love your enemies. You got to love those who persecute you. Let me tell you, brethren, I don't know if I can say I've ever like really, really been persecuted. But we're going to learn the meaning of this probably in some new ways in the coming years. And you know, it's difficult sometimes to love your brethren when they're not doing what's right. But when they're coming after you, and they're coming after your family, and they're coming after your rights and your privileges, and they're coming after your ability to worship, and they're coming after whatever it is, the cross of Christ has enemies. And brethren, we have to be so careful because we're loving in a time where it's easier to love. But when that love is tested is when we are persecuted. Jesus didn't keep loving each other and, oh, love everybody. And then when they said, well, we should kill him, he says, okay, well, wait a minute. Now I'm going to stand up for myself and I'm going to make sure that you get put in your place because you have no business killing me. And Jesus went to the cross saying, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. May God give us the grace when that day comes to do the same. Last thing about love this morning. That last point deserves a whole sermon, but we don't have time this morning. Why is love greater? Paul concludes his great chapter on love by saying, now these three continue. These three abide: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Why is love greater at the end? Have you ever pondered that? Stop to think about that. Why is love the greatest thing? Why is it the most important thing? I think it goes back to the beginning of this paragraph at the end. In the beginning of verse 8, he says, love never ends. It's forever. And he contrasts it to some of the gifts and says, those things are going to pass away. There's going to come a day you won't need those things anymore. You're going to grow up. But love is the thing we always, 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 always need. And it's the thing that lasts forever. We talk about faith, you know, and Lord, haste the day when the faith shall be sight. And we sing about that. Hope is realized. Romans 8 talks about that. Who hopes for what he already sees? There's going to come a day when faith is sight and hope is realized, but love continues forever. And that is true of our love for God. And that's one reason it's so important to go back to the greatest commands, because the love that we have for God doesn't just stay in this life. We can die, and that love just continues. That's just the beginning of our loving God, because we get to be with him forever and continue to grow forever. It takes forever to love an infinite God. And so we'll have forever to love him. And it's the love that continues among his people. And that's the thing I love about this. There's a chapter change here. We're going to change and things are going to be different. But the love does not stop. The relationship that we have does not stop. We're in a work and in a kingdom and in a love that never ends. It cannot be destroyed. That's awesome. This kingdom is founded on a love that cannot be shaken. Not even death can stop it. Moving can't stop it. You know, all these different things. It is forever. And so love is the greatest thing. I take great consolation in that, in this transition right now, is that our relationships can continue to grow. And not just wherever we may be next, or wherever we may be next after that, or wherever you might be next after that, because life changes. Life is always changing. That's just part of life. But when we love one another as God has loved us, that never has to change. And that can continue all through eternity. Thank God for that. That's our lesson this morning. I want to close with a prayer that Paul has for the Ephesians and that I have for the brethren here. And note the connection between knowing God's love and loving in this prayer, because that's my prayer for us, for all of us. For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. Now to Him who is able to do far more abundantly than all that we ask or think, according to the power at work within us, to Him be the glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. If you need to respond to God's love this morning, let us know how we can help you. Thank you for your love. And if there's some way that we can show our love for you this morning, let us know while we stand and while we sing.